Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
Derek, it is Tuesday.
It is, sir. It is Tuesday.
And tomorrow?
I think is Wednesday, right?
Is Wednesday, June 26th. Six. Also known as National Canoe Day.
Hmm.
And what are you doing for National Canoe Day?
Working.
Really? You're not taking the day off to go paddling?
No.
What a coincidence. Dude, I'm so swamped at work. I was going to go up to the canoe museum. They're doing a little thingy up there. Okay, it was their annual general meeting, and they're doing a flotilla around the lake and all that sort of stuff and getting in and seeing the museum. And so I was going, you know, I'm going to take the day off of work. And I'm going to go up, take my canoe, go up for a paddle with the big flotilla. And
how's that plan working out?
Yeah. I'm just so happy. Jazz hands. unfortunately, it's just been nonstop. I can't afford to take the day off this week because I might have to take another day off, and I won't say why, but possible visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You're like coppers. Is that warrant?
The coppers are coming to pay me a visit. Hey, what are you growing in your backyard, sir? Tomato plants? Lots of potato plants or tomato plants? Oh, geez. What's up with you?
I wanted to mention right off the bat. So at my work, there's these huge hydro towers and, you know, the big metal towers.
They look like giant people?
Yeah, those things. Anyways, we're right by the lake and for some reason they went with a new contractor for bird mitigation. Generally, the premise is scare the birds away. And so this new guy, he's not scaring the birds away. You look on top of the buildings at work, and it's standing room only for cormorants.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on which way the wind is blowing, my parking spot is usually pretty okay.
Usually.
Yesterday, I went out to my car, and it was like, whoa!
Pilot the bombardier! Pilot the bombardier!
So, yeah. You ever see the videos online where some jilted lover has gone and painted the dude's truck or car or whatever because they're so mad? It was my car, but it was all cormorant crap.
And I couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
I stood there about 20 feet away, and I got a photo of it. And as I was standing there, on my right and on my left, I heard plop, plop. It's like, and I look up, and I can see like 20 of them above me. It's like, I'm not standing in the right spot. So as I rush over to my car, and as I open the door, something hit the top of my car, and all these little white liquid specks just flew everywhere inside the car on me. As I'm driving away from work, I can see people walking on the sidewalk at work, and it was, I was kind of like, oh man, I got to wash the car. But in the meantime, I'm like laughing because as I pass people, they do double and triple takes and stare at me going by. It's like, what happened to his car? And so at least three people turned and looked just like, oh. It was funny. And then when I was on the highway, I'm just in the slow lane behind a truck waiting for my exit. And as cars come by, I glance, and then when I see them beside me, I look over at them, and there was one car, it was this little silver Hyundai something, and the woman was staring, open-faced, just staring at me, and the guy driving was leaning forward and tilted his head side, was just staring at my car.
Well, that's considered good luck, right?
Is it? Sure.
Meanwhile, there's some cormorant up there racing to his buddy saying, I got him! That counts, right?
It smelled like rotting seafood. It was just, it's like, the smell of like mussels or shellfish.
So did you go directly to a...
No, I went to my driveway. Our local car wash is touchless.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get rid of it. I had to use water, soap, and a brush. It was baked on.
Do you guys not have a manual car wash in Trollville?
Yeah, I could have gone to that, I guess. That's across town. I just went home and got the hose, got the brush.
Oh, now your driveway's covered.
The driveway smells like cormorant poop.
So and now it just attracts them all.
So I got home and I said, you guys should go look at my car, especially the driver's side. Oh, no. Were you in an accident? Just go look.
Accident? Yes. Me? No.
So Stella graduated grade 8 last night. And so they were all like, you got to wash that. Stella's not going to go to her graduation in the poopmobile. I know.
Lucky you. I only get a couple. We have a wire that goes from our building across the parking lot.
Yeah.
And depending on where you park and what day it is and whether the birds have been eaten or not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It depends on whose car gets hit. It's like a lottery.
Yeah, it was it was like, yikes. Let me see. There's.
Should we post this picture?
We could. So, there's my car on the right.
Holy jeez!
So, the car on the left.
That is bad.
That other guy's car is much worse than mine.
This is worse than yours. Note to self, don't park there again.
I know. Well, today, people that park there, no poop. But it's just the way the wind was blowing.
Well, with that much poop, I don't think the cormorants are going to poop for a week. We'll post that picture.
It's like, whoa.
People are going to want to know now.
Yeah, it's...
Show me the car.
Well, I've got so many... every time I go out, I take pictures of people's cars that got pooped on. And today, I had a couple of people come up laughing at me. I saw your car when I left to work yesterday. It's like, <"Arr." laughs> And it smelled so bad, you could smell it inside, too.
Yeah, that's the worst. Well, couldn't happen, nicer guy. Better you than me, I always say.
So the white must be the calcium from the shellfish they're eating, I assume. Why does bird poop turn white? Chalk white.
Why are you even wondering about that?
Well, I'm curious. It's
I'm not. It's poop.
In berry season, you see, like, at work, there's other... Where there's a lot of birds on the property. So when the berries are ripe, all the poop on the cars is like purple.
I don't know.
But yeah, the cormorant poop is...
I know science, but I don't know this science.
And on every single light post, you can see, you look up, and there's twin lights on each post. And there's usually about two or three cormorants per nest, and about two or three on the crossbar between the lights.
No seagulls?
I think the
cormorants. I mean, if you want to get into poop, I mean, how much of this is seagull versus, what's the ratio of seagull to cormorant poop on your car?
Oh, that's good. Well, right? See, I think the cormorants chase them away.
You want to go down this rabbit hole, buddy? We got a couple hours right here.
The cormorants are aggressive. So the bird mitigation guy, he brings in a hawk, and he couldn't bring his hawk anymore because the cormorants were beating up his hawk.
Really?
Yeah. He says, I can't do it. My hawks are getting injured. It's like, okay. I didn't know.
Time for a tougher hawk, buddy.
I know.
But they chased me.
Yeah, it's insane. This is the worst I've ever seen it. I've never seen it this bad. And you look at all the buildings, and there's like all these black cormorants lining the edges of the building. It's like, what's going on?
Oh, for the good old days when kids carried slingshots.
Like Alfred Hitchcock. The birds.
The cormorants are coming for you.
Yeah, that's what we get, being so close
to the... What are you going to do? You know what? Sometimes we go paddling down there along the shoreline of Lake Ontario, and you can see where they've been and where they are. There's trees just covered.
They destroy islands. Yeah. They kill all vegetation. What is it? It's so acidic. Their poop is so acidic that nothing can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so the trees die, and they paint the rocks white, and it's...
Too bad you couldn't train them like they do. Remember, you see those pictures of the old guys in Japan standing in the boat, and they trained the cormorants to go down and grab the fish and bring them back?
Yeah.
See, you can make a fortune. So that's what you do. You train, you get a couple dozen of them, and you train them. And then you do tours out on the lake with fishermen.
You'd have to get them as a baby, and then train them
This is a great money-making idea.
I don't
Cormorant canoe trips. Cormorant canoe fishing trips.
The cormorants are fed well, and they catch fish for the yeah. for the humans.
And then you get to take the fish home
the
that,
bounty.
Your cormorant catches.
Yeah. Everybody gets their own cormorant.
And considering you didn't catch the fish, do fish limits count?
Yeah, it's possession.
Oh,
it's all about possession.
Well, it's the birds. Oh, until you eat all the until all the fish is gone, the bird stays with you.
How many birds do you have, sir? I have none. What's that box? What's that cooler of fish? Oh, that belongs to the bird.
That belongs to the bird.
It's not mine. Oh. And then the bird would just be standing there looking sideways at the warden going,
you want a piece of this? Oh, that'd be a pretty cool tour, though.
And they sound funny, too. Like, I've never been that close to cormorants before. Like, out you know, Algonquin or whatever. Yeah. They're far away, but, like up close, they sound like some kind of weird dinosaur from a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's got this weird bubbling. It's like, whoa, what is that?
That sounded realistic.
Oh, remember the night on, I can't remember what lake it was, me and you, with the island with the birds on it. And they screamed and chortled all night long.
And I can never remember the name of that bird.
Cormorant seagulls.
No, there was another one.
Charlie? Ralph?
Bobby? No, that was, was that not the pine tree site there on Lavalier across from the rocks?
Was it? Site had a name on a map, so it was one of those special sites.
Yeah.
Breacher's Point or something?
Yeah, I can't remember, but I remember the rock. Yeah, all night long, just going nonstops. Yeah.
Shut up, birds. Oh. I'm trying to sleep.
Anywho, sorry to hear about your dilemma with bird poop.
So I'm being more selective in my parking spots now.
Yeah, I take the bus.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Ugh. Wow. Good thing elephants don't fly.
And the light standards are all right by the sidewalk. So when you're walking, you have to watch the cormorants up above you. And because you can usually, if you keep an eye on them, you can see them when they start to lift their tail. It's like, okay, run, go walk between the cars over here. Because the sidewalk is just covered in white poop.
That's when you need an umbrella.
And they look down at you, like, as you're walking by.
What's the game to them?
Their head turns sideways, and you can see they're pointing one eyeball at you.
They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing.
Ready, aim. Little buggers.
Speaking of your work.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
You discovered something.
I did. So, one of the guys knows that I'm into canoeing. And so he called me over today and says, hey, you got to see this. I said, what are you talking about? And so the other guy, he goes, they pull up the phone and says, yeah, I just popped this out of the mold on the weekend. It's like, what? So apparently somebody, I don't know who, had bought all of Scott Canoe's molds however many years back. And he, on Facebook Marketplace, because the guy was going to start a business and start making his own canoes, and then he decided, not for me. So he was selling off his Scott Canoe molds. And so Patrick at work, Pat, he got himself a 14-foot mold, and it's like, it's this beautiful mold. It's like, I first looked at it, he goes, what is that? He's like, oh, that's the mold. It's like, it looks like a canoe. Well, it's a reverse image. So whatever. Anyways, so he had just popped out a new one on the weekend, and so he made himself a carbon Kevlar. He ordered all the carbon Kevlar from China. He got himself a vacuum machine. He got himself giant vacuum bags, and there's a release agent, release wax. He put on the mold. You're laying all the fibers and you epoxy it. And then he said he got this fabric because you want the inside of the canoe. The outside you want shiny and smooth, but on the inside you want it to be a little bit rougher with a pattern, right? And so he said there's a fabric that doesn't stick that you lay it out and the vacuum sealer, the vacuum machine will suck all the air out. And he vacuumed it, let it. He said you can't let it cure 100%, so that it will release from the mold and won't be hard and brittle. And so he said he figured it was about 80-90% cured, and then he just released it, wedges and pneumatic and blow air in between, and it pops right out of the mold. And it's a, he's got a nice 14-foot carbon Kevlar. He's, what did he say? It was so there's nothing on it right now, as in no gunnels, no seats,
whatever. It's just the shell.
Just the shell. It's 10.5 pounds. And he's going to look up, what did he say? He's looking, he found a place that has plastic gunnels or plastic stuff for gunnels, because he didn't want to use wood, and he didn't, he was too hard to find. He was having trouble finding aluminum. the dog's shaking her head. He had trouble finding the aluminum gunnels, so he's going with a plastic gunnel, and he's going to put a kayak seat in.
Oh, so like right on the ground, like on the floor.
Yeah, right on
like,
the floor.
Like the pack boats.
Yeah. So that's his plan. So that's pretty cool. It's and so he's well, he retires in December of this year, and so he's thinking that this is going to be one of his little hobbies when he retires. So once he gets this thing done, he's seen how easy it's going to be, and so he's going to start building canoes. And I guess this is going to keep him busy in retirement. So I was chatting with him today. So he's going to. He's either going to build one for me, or he's going to loan me the mold. I think I'm going to get him to...
I'd get him to build one.
Yeah, I'm going to get him to
build
one.
You need all that extra stuff and then learn how to do it.
Exactly.
It's sitting in your garage. Who are you
kidding? I wouldn't want to borrow all of his... I'd have to buy all my own material anyways. And I'd have to... Once I start sourcing and buying, and I'd have to get my own vacuum bag. I'd use his vacuum machine. But I'll get him to build it for me. He just has to. I just need him to do the shell, and I can do the gunnels and the seats and whatever.
Well, that's the big thing, right? Is just get the shell made. If he can do that for you,
yeah, exactly.
Then you do the rest.
Yeah. I can even. I just go to his house and I'll help him build the shell.
See,
there you go.
But that's a cool little hobby for a retired guy.
I know, and it's just
some extra money, maybe.
And it's so cool that he has his own mold. Like that's
one pretty, or two molds.
Yeah. So he has. He doesn't know the model or design of the other mold. The one the 14 footer is a Scott canoe, but the other one is like, so the Scott canoe is just it's a exact mirror image of a canoe, or whatever you mean. So it just, it lays everything inside, but his other one comes apart like clamshell. And so it bolts together and then you pop the sides apart to pull the boat out, but he doesn't know. What he just found it somewhere, he bought it somewhere, but he doesn't know what design it is or anything like that.
So he hasn't made one of those yet.
No, he hasn't yet. Yeah.
Hmm.
So he's starting to get ready for his retirement. He said he's already built a couple. He's built himself a Cedar Stripper kayak, and now he's halfway through building a carbon Kevlar single canoe. So that's pretty cool. It's.
Well, if you can get it down pat,
you're
not going to build enough to compete with the big boys. If Pat gets things down pat, he figures out how to do it and how much it costs for materials, and then throw in some extra sort of deal.
But it's like, oh wow, that's pretty amazing. Like I've always wondered how I could get my hands on a mold to do something like that, but you can't just get your hands on these things, so.
Huh. Well, apparently you can.
Apparently you can.
And Pat has shown this.
Yes, yeah. So he said he'll loan me either of the molds if I want to. And it's like, oh, that's really interesting. So he's a 16-footer and a 14-footer. No, 14 or 12?
I know you said 14 earlier.
I think it's 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's only setting it up for a single. He's not going to put two seats in it. He's going to put a kayak seat in it. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. 10.5 pounds, just the shell. That's pretty light. Once you start putting other stuff in it, and that's where all the weight comes from, is like,
oh, yeah.
Once you put on gunnels and caps and seats and yoke and yada, yada, yada.
See, I don't like sitting right on the bottom.
No, I don't think I would either.
And the other thing he's going to have to think of is, if he's going to do that, is I presume he's going to use a double-bladed paddle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make sure it's not too high on the sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if you make it too high and it's meant to have a seat,
yeah,
then you're going to have an awful problem paddling.
I like sitting up high in a canoe. I like the vantage point. I like, you know, my legs can move around. I can sit, stick a leg underneath the seat and sit there cross-legged type thing. And it's comfortable. It's a comfortable position.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I usually do. I have my legs crossed right in front of you or kneeling with my butt on the edge of the seat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
I know. I'm that's excited now. I'm going to help him with his projects in his retirement.
And then he'll leave them to you in his will, right?
Yes, absolutely.
That is the plan, because this figure he's what, 15 years older than you? 10 years older than you?
No, I think he'd be about my age. He started a lot earlier than me at work. So
he's not going to die 20 years before you.
No, he looks very young and he looks very healthy. So. Oh,
so maybe you'll leave them in your will.
Yeah, I'm probably going to die long before him. He's very young and healthy. Yeah. But he also started like 15 whatever years before I did, I think. Sometime in the 90s.
Nah, you're just a late bloomer, that's
right. Yeah. I'm on my third career, so.
Oh, man. You've been reading Paddling Magazine again.
I have.
Again?
I have.
That's all you do.
I originally got the thing from Paddle Mag, but it's about a guy who wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so they talk about this guy. So until I saw this, I thought, oh, that's a neat way to call it something. You know, these weekend warriors.
Right.
Right. That's how I visualize it, is weekend warriors. And what he calls it is micro adventures or micro adventuring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I found it in Paddle Mag, and he talks about, you know, most of us see big trips, then we want to do big trips, and most of us plan for big trips. You know, it's like, well, it's one of my 2 or 3 weeks a year I can go do something. I'm gonna go big. I'm gonna do the Noir. I'm gonna go do the Sim, and I'm gonna go to the whatever river, right? So this guy says, well, actually, if you know, when you don't have much time, and so the way he's talking, it's like, that sounds like how I'm planning my summer. Is I'm just going to try and get out on some weekend getaways with the kids, like locally, like Halliburton Highlands, and whatever, right? QE2. So this guy says, you know, you got a lot of responsibilities, job, mortgage, kids, cars, yada, yada, yada. So they're recommending shorter, closer, and cheaper trips. And they call them micro adventures. And here's a quote from, we were joking earlier about the name. It's very pretentious. So it's Alastair Humphreys, British adventurer, coined the term and wrote a book of the same title. A micro adventure is an adventure that is short, simple, local, cheap, yet still fun, exciting, challenging, refreshing, and rewarding. So it's like, I say it derogatorily, but I say it jokingly that way. But yeah, that's weekend warriors.
Yeah, right? That's what it is. Yeah. You know, I mean, the guy's name's Tim Shuff. He's the guy that wrote the article.
Yes.
And he's, you know, he says you want to do these trips, you have these big trips, but it's not feasible for a lot of us. Like, you know,
no.
You save up all your money and your vacation time and you do a big trip to the Nahani or something like that.
Some people don't get vacation.
People don't get that much sometimes, right? So, nor do they make enough money to be able to save to do that sort of thing. So it's always on your bucket list.
You go big and stay close to home. And so you do this like big bass opener weekend trip or the big trout opener weekend trip, and it's just a big whoop up, and you're going whole hog trying to get as far as you can deep into the woods and get yourself some fish, and it's like a micro adventure.
Yeah, and that's what you do. And I mean, as much as we'd love to do all these trips, and I mean, this year with us, we had all these trips planned and everything sort of had the kibosh put on this year because of family stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were heading out west and we were heading up north and heading down south and, you know, and everything is like all planned out. And then all of a sudden, boom, things happen. But if you can, you go out and there's 3 days here and a couple of days added to a weekend and you're heading here and you're heading there. And yeah, it's not the big trips that you were hoping for, but you're not stuck in the couch watching TV.
And with me, with my kids at the age they are, they've got a bunch of summer camp scheduled and this, that, the other thing. And so it's not like I can just like, I don't want to, we're going to plan a trip. We're going to do a big trip in August, probably go to Tomogamy. We haven't decided yet. We're playing it by ear, but otherwise it's like, we can't get away. Siobhan's got a new job, so she only has so much vacation available. And so it's like, I'm going to do a bunch of weekend trips. I'll go mm-hmm. one weekend with Stella, pick another weekend with Beckett and stuff like that, and just kind of get a little micro-adventure. Do some caving with Beckett and do some hiking with Stella and whatever, right?
When you take the kids out by yourself, make sure you bring them home. Trust me, your wife will be rather annoyed.
Nobody
if you show
said
up
that was a rule.
It is, apparently. Apparently. It's just like that. You can't take them back to the hospital and give them back. Hospital says, no, you left. They're yours.
So when I was thinking of all those micro-adventures, I just kind of thought to myself, you know what? Me and Sean should get away for a kayak tour of Georgian Bay. Just do a one-nighter or a two-nighter. Zip up into Georgian Bay on a Friday and come back on a Sunday. And
yeah.
So
hang out with all the rattlesnakes?
I've did it once, and it didn't work out so well. I rented a kayak and went into Algonquin, did the portages. It was a nightmare.
Oh, yes.
Because when I moved here from British Columbia, I'd only really used to kayaks, right? Like, I hadn't used canoes since I grew up in New Brunswick. Then when I was out in BC, it was all kayak, kayak, kayak. And then when I got here, like that summer that I moved here, it was like, I'm going to rent a kayak and go camping. And portaging is not conducive.
No. People do it, but no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, not this people.
Yeah. I was looking into, I remember at the time I was looking into elevated yokes, clamped on so that the whole kayak is like a foot above your head, because you hard to see when you're in this, you get your head jammed in the hole of a kayak, or walking with the kayak just on your shoulder after on a long portage. So anyways, I moved on to canoes, but I did that one trip by kayak that I camped, and I've always wanted to get out. Now that I have a kayak, I want to get out and I want to check out Georgian Bay and stuff like that.
Well, there's also some bigger lakes that you can park at,
yeah,
paddle
yeah.
up the lake,
Opiongo,
camp,
and yeah,
and then boot around, sort of exactly. thing, right? So, yeah, maybe we'll try something.
Uh-huh.
But you've got other things planned, too, this summer.
I do.
In a walking sort of way.
Yes, I'm leaving my ways of the water, and I'm going on land.
Shame!
Shame! Yeah, so I've reached out to a couple people. So Grant Brower, he reached out to me and says, hey, anybody, he reached out to our group of people and says, anybody want to do a Superior, what is it called?
The Lake Superior Coastal Trail.
So it's like, oh, yeah, I've heard about that one. I've seen pictures from that one, like people doing that route. And it's very bad in the rain and stuff like that. But it's like, yeah, Grant, I want to go. So that's going to be in September.
I don't know why I never get asked to go on these trips.
He asked the group of us that we did the White Mountains and Washington.
I never get asked to go on those. How come?
I don't know.
Not that I would actually go. Walking uphill both ways? No.
So anyway, so I'm right now I'm in the middle of playing that, and we'll see how that goes. It sounds fun. It sounds exciting. It's going to be about a 5-day trip. And then the other ones here you got written here, I don't want to say anything about it because it's not a
for sure.
It's not a for sure thing, and I don't know if he wants me to start talking about his potential trips that he's got planned. So, but it's there's other hikes there and in Newfoundland that is like, oh, very interesting. So it gives me an opportunity to I got a brand new pair of North Face waterproof hiking boots. I'm going to be able to get those worked in. So I've only worn them once for a couple local hikes. And so I'm going to get those broken in and see how they work out. So, yeehaw.
Yeah, you won't catch me walking.
So the thing is
I do enough of that at work.
Beckett's not a hiker, not a walker. He just whines. Are we done yet? Are we done yet? So Beckett is going to be a canoe camping kind of kid. But Stella wants to hike. Stella, and so it's she wants to go for a hike. She wants, so you know, let's go hiking with Stella and go canoe camping with Beckett.
That works.
Do the Highlands or something with Stella.
Yeah,
she'd enjoy that.
Yeah. Till she has. Now, does she like hiking or does she like backpacking?
Well, we'll soon find out.
There is a distinction.
There is a distinction.
Okay, we're going to go hiking. Yay, but you got to carry a big pack. Not so yay.
Yeah.
How did you like it? Great, up until we started. Sounded good at the time.
So those are some exciting plans.
Cool.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'm playing this entire summer by ear now.
Yeah?
Yep.
Perfect.
With a plan to hopefully be paddling in Japan next spring.
Ooh.
That's my plan now.
Yes.
We'll see how that one goes, because we know how this year's turned out so far.
I know, right?
No, if things work out, we're gonna head over to Japan and see Ariana and hook up with some paddling people over there.
Cool.
And
that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty neat.
Be a bit of a
And we know a few people over there.
Do we?
No, of.
Oh, no, people. Of.
No, of say. A few people.
No, a few. Well, I know at least one person.
So there's, who did the Yukon with Tack with John Van Berger?
Yeah.
And,
And they're up. I wonder where he, I should talk to John, find out where he is.
Yeah.
Because his family owns a chateau restaurant thingy or chalet or something, right? I'm pretty sure that's what he said. They own a chalet or something.
I'm friends with Tack on Facebook, but I don't see much from him.
Yeah.
I know he's got a baby that's like 2 now.
Hmm.
So
anyway, that's the plan. We'll see. We were talking about pack rafts.
Yes, we talked about them just, was it just last week or
2 weeks ago?
So we talked about all the new designs and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
Alpaca Raft has a new one, the Tango.
As soon as I saw this, it's like, oh, look at that.
Right?
It's a 2-person pack raft.
I'm not sure I like that idea.
I do. I think it's a good idea. I think so. You are losing a few things by having a 2-man design. But I think so. Gosh darn it. What is the name of that hike up? It's a Des Moines. It's at the base of the Des Moines. Every time I talk about it, I say.
Oh, that river trail, the cart trail thing, or the.
Hiking trail. It's a riverside hiking trail.
Yes.
They had just opened it a year and a half, 2 years ago, last year.
Yeah.
And so it's 26 kilometers long. So it's something like this, 2 people with this pack raft. Did they give the weight?
The weight with Cargo Fly is 12.9 pounds.
That's so light.
So, but no, my whole thing is I want my own. I don't want anybody in there with me.
Yeah.
That's like having your own kayak. You don't want a second person in there if you don't need it.
And it does say it's not, doesn't work well for a single paddler, which because of its design, I guess you could kneel in the middle and try and make it work.
Yeah.
But it's the design is really works best for 2 people. It's designed for 2 people. So it's
the Tango is a full size 2-person kayak style pack raft for speed and comfort on lakes, coastal areas and rivers up to class 2. It's their fastest tandem model and features a low profile hull with a full length inflatable floor. The rear paddler sits on a lace-in seat and has an inflatable backrest for support. The front paddler has an inflatable seat and backrest. Both paddlers have ample leg room for kayak-style paddling. And they do. They show their legs stretched out.
Yeah.
Right? Due to the lower volume tubes and to maximize speed, the Tango is not available in a self-bailing configuration.
That's a drawback.
So it is great for flat water rivers and protected lakes and coastal areas, but not recommended for significant white water. It is ideal for 2 adults or paddling with an older child who can do their own paddling and wants to stretch out their legs. The extra speed also makes it an ideal adventure racing pack raft.
So this trip, on the Des Moines, you spend a day or two hiking up, and you could hike up, take a Friday off to hike the route up on the Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday you paddle down. And I think it's ideal, right? I think this is a like for a two-person configuration, I like it. I like it a lot.
Is it the Des Moines Tote Road Trail?
Yes, that's yes. it. Tote Road. Yes.
Yeah.
Does it just say 26? In my head, I get 26 kilometers.
16.3 mile point. I'm just looking at the Des Moines Tote Road Trail. Des Moines River in western Quebec, one of the last free-flowing, undammed, unsettled wild river tributaries left in the Ottawa River river watershed. Doodly-doo-doo-doo. The Tote Road background information. 150 years, 75 meter elevation. I'm not seeing... Yeah, we'll just go with the 26 miles.
Well, as I recall, it's like supposed to be you could do it in 2 days, 2 day up, and then 2 hours back down on the river.
2 hours back?
Yeah, something like that. Because you gotta eddy out and stuff, so it's gonna take a little bit of time. But for some reason, I got in my head two and two.
But I don't want to carry a pack raft all that distance.
It's only 12 pounds.
But just for...
It's 12 pounds.
2 hours of paddling?
It's 12 pounds.
It's 2 hours of paddling.
Well, I guess you could swim.
For 2 hours. Yeah, whatever. it's 145 inches long, the outside, the exterior width is 36 and a half inches.
What's that in feet?
Divide that by 12. Yeah. 88 inches on the inside, 14 inch width. That's not very wide. But, I mean, it's not like you're rolling around in it or anything. Weight with cargo fly, 12.9 pounds. Weight includes all components except inflation bag, repair kit, and internal dry bags for the cargo fly.
Huh.
Packed size 21 inches by 9.5 inches.
That's a lot of size.
Max capacity 600 pounds. Max capacity is the maximum total weight, paddlers and cargo, that the boat can reasonably carry in flat water under ideal conditions. Actual capacity for any given trip will vary widely based on the paddler's skill and water conditions. So 600 pounds... in a massive storm mm-hmm. with two really big fat guys, ain't going to go your way. Just saying. Or maybe it will.
Maybe.
So the cargo fly, and this is what I've looked at. This is why I like these things. An innovative cargo fly internal storage system comes standard on the Tango. The cargo fly features an airtight zipper installed in the stern of the boat to allow you to store your gear inside the tubes. The system provides drier and more secure gear storage and improved paddling performance due to a lower center of gravity. Internal dry bags may be purchased separately and are designed to work with the cargo fly system. Bags slip inside the cargo fly zipper, can be organized along the inside of the tubes to balance the load. Tango has internal attachments to clip the dry bags in place, and the Tango is sized for the standard size internal dry bags.
That's neat. So that's...
Because I saw that before when I was down at Canucopia and they were down there.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, before you inflate it, there's a zipper.
Yes.
You know, that you unzip. Mm-hmm. And you put all your crap in there, and then you zip it back up, and you're like, okay. And then you inflate it.
Yep. Yep.
That's really wild.
So the same thing is available. I think Trek makes them, but it's a buoyancy bags, basic buoyancy bags. I need them for my kayak. And so I found, or Alan Drummond told me about them. They're just these little triangle bags that zip open.
Mm-hmm.
You can stick your gear in them, then stick them in.
Kingdom Outdoor?
I don't know.
Hey, you'll have to look that up. Anyway, yeah, your gear just...
Yeah. So you have a dry bag and gear storage. So it keeps your gear dry.
Mm-hmm.
Plus it creates buoyancy in the bow and the stern of your kayak. And I've got a skin on frame kayak. So I need that buoyancy because I don't have bulkheads or anything like that. So it's, I think it's going to be over $300 for a set of bags for my kayak.
Wow.
Yeah, but you're getting something with a waterproof zipper. You know, you can inflate them. They've got a little pump attachment, so you can inflate them and whatever.
And put your stuff in it.
Yeah, and keeps your stuff dry and keeps you afloat if you take on water.
Not only that, but if all of a sudden Earth loses all of its atmosphere, you got a couple bags filled with air to spare. Just saying.
Yeah, so you can last an extra 2 minutes.
Just saying. You can wave goodbye, watch the rest of us go.
Don't look up.
This alpaca raft, the Tango.
Yeah. I like it.
Except for a canoe, I prefer to paddle alone.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Well, even some days in the canoe, I just prefer to paddle alone. You know, my dog's only there as ballast.
Yeah. What I like about the dog is the dog doesn't talk.
I think I saw it was $1,900.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
$1,900. Mm-hmm. So go check them out. Alpaca Raft. The Tango. Because you all know it takes
two
to tango. Oh, we're such dads.
Dad joke.
Flash Flood, you brought this one up.
Yeah, I saw it a couple places. So on the Mountain Buzz bulletin board chat thing, whatever, they got their own little chat group. And so... did you see the videos?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Is that something? So usually when you're floating down the San Juan,
San Juan River, yeah.
You expect a leisurely, relaxing class one to float through some of the best scenery in the state. But not so on January 20th.
June.
Yeah, not so on January 20th either. not so on June 20th.
So that was just a couple days ago.
Yeah, when a flash flood scoured through the canyon, forcing rafting parties to scramble for their lives and gear. Posts on this Mountain Buzz were a buzz. About the flood, which swelled the San Juan to 27,000 cubic feet per second. Washing out campsites downstream where rafting parties were overnighting, including those at Grand Gulch, Olieto Wash, and Steer Gulch.
So just by the names of these places, like, hey, these things I think are prone to flash floods by the names of them.
Right. Several parties lost their boats in the deluge, but thankfully no serious injuries or deaths were reported.
It's amazing. I'm surprised.
Right? I mean, you see the videos and stuff like that, it's like, wow. One sample post on Mountain Buzz. The Juan flashed big yesterday, 20,700 cubic feet per second, dropped to 3,500, then up to a steady 9,000-ish.
That's big changes.
Yeah, from which it's only now starting to slowly drop. I'm hearing stories of empty boats floating by Mexican Hat. Any news? Is everyone okay? Spoke to a friend who was camped at Olieto yesterday and said he had to post the following.
So these are all posts. These are all different individual posts from Mountain Buzz.
What I've heard so far, a group of 23 lost their boats when Lime Creek flashed big. People stranded at Ledge Camp. Folks being evacuated and cared for at Recapture Lodge in Bluff. Hilo flew from Bluff downstream last night, but no word on which agency or info on injuries. We were at Steer Gulch, lost two boats, and had to abandon a lot of gear in camp, but all are safe. The Olieto group took two of our members on their boats. Looks like all camps below Slickhorn A and B were under a lot of water. Steer was 3 feet deep in mud when we left. The two missing boats are a blue high side and blue NRS, both 14 feet. And that's the thing is, when you have all that kind of geology down there, all that water turns everything to mud.
So,
and if it's 2 to 3 feet of mud, and you're sinking.
There's one, I saw a still picture, and then I saw a video of a similar location. And so you could see the curve of the river. And so you could look up San Juan, just a little S curve. And you could see, like, let's say 100-meter cliffs on either side. And 100-meter cliff, 100-meter cliff, 100-meter cliff, 100-meter cliff, as they kind of crop up around the river, and off of each cliff was like a waterfall falling into the San Juan. So all the water hit the top of the plateau, rolled off, and fell into the San Juan. And so it was just, it's like the fountains of the Bellagio, and it was just like water flying everywhere. And so all that water, it's
only got one way to go.
It's basically desert and Arroyo canyons, just stone canyons, right? And so there's nothing to suck up the water, so it just washes out and quickly because there's nothing holding it back. And so I can see from the picture and videos that I saw, you can see why it jumped 20,000 cubic feet per second. And then, so it's just a big rainstorm came through. They said, oh, for the 15 minutes, it was like heavy hail and heavy rain. And then if flood waters come up, can you imagine like you're set up camp and it's like for high ground?
Well, that's exactly it. Oh.
It was crazy.
One other post said, we were camped at Grand Gulch last night, party five. We fortunately had high ground that we could move to as the river came up very rapidly and we were surrounded by water down low. It was a super scary situation and the strength of the storm and the scene we witnessed were unbelievable. Very sorry to hear about others that lost boats and gear. Another one, I was at the washed out Olato camp. Group. Our party of 15 made it out safe with a couple extra from steer. Eight tents and some camping gear were under 2 feet of mud. Olato was a river from wall to wall. The high ground downstream was a lifesaver. The flash flood that peaked within 5 minutes of 2 inches of hail lasted 15 minutes or so. 15 minutes later, camp was gone. Glad to hear that everyone is currently safe.
2-inch hail, that'll knock you out.
Right? All within 5 minutes, too, right? Mm-hmm. Peaked in 5 minutes, lasted 15 minutes, and that's what you get is that massive flash flood. Group at Grand Gulch, Olato, Wash, and Steer Gulch are safe and accounted for. There is tent and camping debris left at Olato.
I think you've said that word
six different ways?
Every single time.
Yep.
One of them would be right, maybe.
Olato. O-L-J-E-T-O.
I think it's like the J is like Jesus, or like Jesus.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm like, Olato.
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 Olato. Olato. Olato. Olato.
Now we've said it 12 different ways. 12 different ways. And none of them are right.
And counting. So, yeah, I mean, you never know. You're down there having a great old time, and boom.
Yeah. Well, you don't think that. So you're used to rain. Oh, it's going to rain. It's going to rain. It's going to rain. But suddenly that much rain all at once.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, whoa.
I wonder if that's ever in their briefings and stuff when they're going out.
They must
on
be
their,
prepared
their guide
for it
trips and stuff.
Because
saying,
hey, it's a known flash flood area.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're always of the, oh, yeah, if it rains, you know, if you start to see, you start to hear thunder, you know, the lightning's on its way.
Yeah.
Find a spot to get off the water.
Yeah.
But do they do the same sort of thing? Like,
they must.
You got to find, like, if there's a possibility of...
Keep your gear in dry bags. So everybody set up camp. Yeah. Keep your gear in dry bags. Be prepared.
Write your name on everything. Because when,
when people
at the end of the day, yeah, that's my bag. That's my bag. That's my bag. 7 miles that way, I got another bag. 14 miles down there is another bag.
Me and Siobhan were looking at Instagram videos of this flash flood and you see some like in Utah there's I can't remember what it's called, but it's the red stone and it's you can walk through the wash where it's all washed out. It's like 2 feet wide and it's great sunset sunrise photos, but it's like that's what causes these.
Oh, is that the Arizona canyons and stuff like
is
that?
Is it Arizona or is it Utah?
I think they're both. I think there's more.
There's so
in
many
Arizona.
Places, and it's all sediment rock, right? Sedimentary rock, so it wears away quickly and easily. But it's just like, oh, look, this is what causes it. This is what makes those beautiful little canyons.
I'm going to skip over a couple here. So there's a Minnesota filmmaker, photographer, and a cellist, Zach Rivers. What a name. I got to wonder if that's his real name.
Or his stage name.
Stage name, especially because he's, you know, has had the Mississippi River on his mind for years. 2022, the Mankato native came one step closer to it as part of the documentary crew following 87-year-old Dale Graybeard Sanders in his record-breaking journey as the oldest person to canoe the entire...
We talked about this guy.
Yeah. I saw him at Canucopia there last year. So he's going wants to go from the headwater. Dale went from the headwaters in Itasca to the Gulf of Mexico. Now Rivers is attempting to recreate that journey of 2,340 miles with one twist. He's bringing his cello with him.
It's an easy thing to pack,
right? Filming the man, the myth, the Mississippi was just the push Rivers needed to begin his own journey down the Mississippi as the paddling cellist. You can't stop yourself from giggling at that. But, I mean, it's pretty cool. But then you see this dude. What do you do? What's that? That's a cello. Well, that's something you don't see every day. As part of the documentary crew, Rivers made connections that he will use on his trip, including Big Mike in Mississippi, Graybeard in Memphis, Rivers' uncle in Iowa, and Mississippi River Angels, Ron and Judy Vroom of Bemidji. Is it Burr or Ben?
Bemidji.
Yeah, it's another one we can say wrong. He also plans to share his journey through a documentary of his own. I started to think about all those people I had met on the Graybeard trip, and I wanted to have something to give them, Rivers said. I want to put together a short film, an art piece about the cello. I've seen a lot of good canoe documentaries, and so I kind of wanted to put together something about the music part of it and people part of it. So not just the canoeing part of it, the outside part of that. In a North Star canoe named Legato, Rivers' dream of traveling from the source to sea has finally become a reality. June 1st, he began paddling down the Mississippi River with his cello with the goal of making it to the Gulf of Mexico in 100 days and reconnecting with his instrument along the way. He began learning the cello in second grade, continued playing through college. Young adult, he performed with the Mankato Symphony and the St. Paul Civic Symphony. However, once he started working full-time, life's priorities got in the way. That's like everybody that was in a college or high school band.
But he played professionally, right?
In my 40s, I found I was letting the cello go, he says. I was shooting weddings, shooting senior photos, shooting senior, and in the brackets, photos.
Yeah, we got to clarify. I'm not just shooting seniors. I'm taking photos of them.
That was a hobby. Making films and not playing a lot of cello. And I did not like that. Rivers grew up playing classical music, but on this trip, he's striving to learn improvisation and practice a new repertoire. I need to reestablish my connection with the cello and my relationship with it, he explains. I bought a cello that I can maybe withstand the rigors, fingers crossed. His trusty instrument is a Lewis and Clark carbon fiber cello. I don't even want to begin to know how much that costs.
Oh, I know.
I mean, if you look at a carbon fiber paddle,
mm-hmm.
You got a whole cello.
I saw it was a travel guitar, so the neck just screws off. It's a travel guitar, so it's a smaller, it's a, like a 2/3 size guitar, carbon fiber, packable, so you can take the neck off, stick in your luggage, and it showed people jumping on it in the video, right?
Really?
So it was carbon fiber, very sturdy unit, and it was like $700 US.
Just for the guitar?
Just for the guitar. So I imagine a cello, carbon fiber cello would be...
Over a grand.
Yeah.
Easy.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Paddling cellist is stopping at various stops along the river to perform, time, weather, and instrument condition permitting.
Yeah. So this thing is not going to be damaged easily by water.
No.
Like the strings might rust, but the actual body is going to be very hard.
Well, funny you should mention.
Oh.
Only 3 days into his trip, he already had faced obstacles head on. Minnesota DNR's Mississippi River State Water Trail map warns that the stretch of the Mississippi from Lake Itasca to Cass Lake contains areas with abundant vegetation, log jams, and large open water. In a particularly treacherous spot after Fox Trap Landing, Rivers encountered a downed tree that caused his canoe to capsize. boat and gear strapped to it, in it, was underwater for 30 minutes. We were tested by a log that was just got the best of us. But, you know, that's happened a few times on the trip, and it's just part of dodging logs and carrying big loads in your canoe, he says. The cello was a little damp. Everything was a little damp considering the water it took on, but it's gonna work. Rivers hopes the worst is behind him, but anticipates the heat, humidity will be the worst challenging parts of it. The paddling cellist has already visualized what he will do when he makes it to the end of his voyage. He says, I do plan to make it to the very end of the Gulf where there's a beach, and I want to play on the beach there. I have 100 days. I have a job to come back to and 100 days in 100 days. And if I don't make it, I'll have to come back and cap it off after I make the movie. So you can follow him, ZachRivers.com, Z-A-K, Rivers.com. And there's also a tracker on there that you can follow his progress.
Yeah.
So that's kind of different.
That's very different.
Right? And he stopped a few spots, and he plays, does a little impromptu concert sort of thing.
I can hear the cello playing in my head right now, just visualizing it out on the side of a river.
Right?
I love the sound of a cello. Don't know how to play it. I would recognize one.
Okay, I'm going to screw this one up, but you won't. Some people who wanted to ride the tidal bore of Nova Scotia River got more than they bargained for when they came across a minke whale beached on a sandbar. Crews from Tidal Bore Rafting Resort, a company that takes passengers on river rides, spotted the stranded marine animal while heading out to meet the surging tide on the...
Go ahead.
Shubenacadie.
Shubenacadie.
That's what I said. Shubenacadie.
You kind of had a neckity in there.
Naked.
Shubenacadie.
Naked. Because you're allowed to skinny dip there.
Shubenacadie.
Shubenacadie.
Yeah.
River. Very exciting. We just happened to have one group, a giant group, and everyone was very concerned, but everyone was getting pictures. Dwight Barkhouse, the resort's rafting operation manager, said Monday. It was like a crazy event. I still can't believe that it even happened. He said the whale was only in about 5 centimeters of water and was being pecked at by crows, so he and the passengers on the company boats rushed to help. He says he hasn't seen anything like it in his 13 years of guiding rafting trips on the river. He said they splashed water on the whale while they waited for the incoming tide. It was so entertaining and just mind-blowing to them that everyone missed the tidal bore coming in. No one was really paying attention to that, and it was a rush to get back in the boats on time. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you've never seen the tidal bore come up the river.
It's like they call it a tidal bore, but it's like a tidal wave.
Yeah. He said while the other boats took off, he stayed with the whale to make sure it got away. He said the last he saw it, the whale was swimming towards the Bay of Fundy.
Right on.
So that's pretty cool, though. Like, so how was your tidal bore trip? Well, it didn't really happen.
We saved a whale.
We saved a whale instead. Can we get our money back?
I wouldn't even ask for my money.
No, that's just a cool experience right there.
That's an amazing experience. That's like once in a lifetime.
And I mean, the water was coming in fast enough that they had to hurry to get into their boats.
Yes.
So I'm sure they did get some of the bore.
Well, and we talked about this before. So on that area of the Bay of Fundy, had to be like 100 episodes ago. We talked about these guys who did a world record surfing run.
The tidal bore. That's right.
So they surfed the whole way.
Yeah.
And so that's in this tidal bore that ends up at Shubenacadie.
Yeah, because when we went out that way, we were hoping to see it, but we were too early the one day and late the next time.
Yeah, I've
only passed by it twice.
I grew up in the area, and I grew up near St. John, New Brunswick, and I lived in Halifax for about 4 or 5 years, and I passed over this area on the main highway hundreds of times as I went between my parents' place and where I lived in Nova Scotia, and I never saw the tidal bore. I never saw it happen.
Really?
But I have gone to like Hopewell Cape, and so big tides there in the Bay of Fundy in New Brunswick, Nova Scotia. And so like you go to the Bay of Fundy, you go to St. Martin's, you go to any of those locations, and it's amazing to see the tide change, right? You're talking like at low tide, all the fishing boats are just sitting there on the on the bottom of the Bay of Fundy.
We saw that at Peggy's Cove.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the boats
It's amazing to see. And what's cool is like
for Digby as well?
Yes, it would
be. Digby. Yeah. We saw that in Digby as well. All the muscle boats.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's neat about that too is like the fishermen, like the boats drop down, they have cribs to for the boats to rest on so they don't tip over on their sides.
Mm-hmm.
And or their design, some of them are designed for it. But you know, if you want to do any bottom maintenance, wait for low tide and walk down on the bottom of the Bay of Fundy.
Well, that's it. I mean, you saw the boats were sitting there. I mean, they were still tied to the dock.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Or the wharf or pier or whatever you want to call it. And then, they were just sitting there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's kind of neat, disturbing.
Pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Quick, start the boat. We're not getting away.
We're not going anywhere.
Who wants to go fishing? Yeah. Here's the keys. Take my boat.
It adds some definite challenges to any water navigation. Like, I remember going through Reversing Falls in St. John, and you got to time it right because it's a rushing. Well, people do whitewater on the Reversing Falls. You can run up the river or you run down, depending on the tide, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like if you're on sailboat, kayak, whatever, you got to plan for the tides.
Yeah, we were on Fundy, and the tide was way out. Like, it was fully out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can walk on the bottom.
It's so neat.
And you're seeing all the things that are left behind in the little pools.
Starfish and
all that
crabs
sort of
and
different shells. Yeah,
periwinkles.
And the kids were younger there, so that was, they thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then, as you're like, wait a minute, that water's coming back. And you're looking around, and then, you'll walk 10 feet that way, and then you got to keep walking.
Yeah.
So, it's not like you got to run, but it's just like all of a sudden you're like,
well, you have to plan it too, because you could be off on somewhere that is high ground, and you have to go through the low ground to get to the ladder back up to the
high point, where we were
it's
was
like, I'm stranded.
Yeah. How long can you tread water?
Yeah. Well, we used to. I grew up in near St. John, so we used to take advantage of it, and we would like dry our own dulse, so seaweed, dry it, salt it, good, nice snack. Or we would periwinkles. So they're little snails,
right?
And so you boil them up and you pluck them out with a toothpick, and you have a nice periwinkle meal. So it's stuff like that.
Periwinkles were flowers.
Well, these are periwinkle shells, periwinkle snails.
Huh.
There's a periwinkle flower as well, but these are the snails.
Slugs in a jug. Yeah, nothing like eating bait, buddy.
Exactly. Oh, what's a bait?
It's pretty neat, though. I mean, it's totally... Well, so I had never seen the ocean before. I mean, I saw lakes and stuff like that. I saw, James Bay and that sort of stuff, Hudson Bay up there. When I lived in Saskatchewan, where there was no water.
Yeah.
I was an air cadet, and I went on the air traffic controller course.
Yes.
Through air cadets. Yeah. So we were out in Ontario and flew out to Ontario. We did all the stuff at Transport Canada.
Hmm.
And then you get sent to different military bases for a couple weeks to do on-hand, real-life training. We got to go to Greenwood, Nova Scotia.
Nice.
And the people that picked this up found out two of us had never seen the ocean.
Oh.
Well, the guy that picked this up knows somebody that had a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So they immediately take us so we could put our feet in the ocean.
Yeah.
And then we walked over to their restaurant and had fried clams.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my God. I couldn't get enough of those. I was just eating them by the armloads. Yeah. But no, that's really cool to see all that. Yeah. If you've never seen it.
It's very unique. It's like it's something where people in Upper Canada don't really are fully aware of.
Mm-hmm.
It's different, almost a different culture type thing.
Yeah,
and even more so if you go to Newfoundland, like it's completely.
Oh,
don't
get me started on them. I work with one of them. But friendly people out there, though, that's for sure. But yeah, just watch and the work that they do out. I couldn't go because we did the whale watch tour, right?
Yeah,
I don't think I can work on a boat like that.
Yeah, I get seasick so easy.
I don't get seasick, but it'd just be like the hips are constantly adjusting to the waves, and
you'd adjust to it.
I know you probably adjust to it, but like, After a while, you're like, you know what? Can you just keep this thing steady, bud? You know, I'm just like, come on. But yes, no, so that's pretty cool about the whale there. They managed to save that. You know, every time you see the pictures, there's, oh, yeah, the mass strandings and...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nothing they can do about it. And, you know, they're hauling them out with a tractor, you know,
yeah.
Pulling them out into the water so that they can...
Yeah.
And then they don't know why they do it, but some of them end up, you get them out there and then they come right back. You know, you're just like, they don't know. I don't think they've ever discovered a scientific reason why they beach themselves.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion. A lot of people blame sonar systems on submarines and boats where it confuses the whales. But other people are saying, no, there's something like if you're in shallow waters in areas where ships traffic don't normally go, and it's usually just military that uses sonar. And if you're not in that area, why are whales beaching themselves in those locations? So it is kind of unusual, and like you say, like a lot of scientists still don't fully understand it.
Yeah, weird, but it's sad to see.
Yes. You ever see I think it's from the 70s, where somewhere's, I think it was in either Maine or somewhere's like that, a whale died, washed up on shore, and all these yahoos said, oh, I know how to get rid of it.
Oh,
it was a kaboom.
So as it sits in the sun, the whale will sort of, all the gases will combine on the inside. Yeah. And once punctured, it explodes.
But no, this one here, so they had, this is a different incident than what you're describing. Like I've seen the one that exploded was in Newfoundland, and that was about 5 years ago, and it exploded.
Yeah.
And intestines flew everywhere. No, the one I was thinking of is, so the Department of Transportation in, I believe it was Maine, they came down, and so they had some bulldozers, they did some back digging, so there was a bit of a berm, and then they put several thousand pounds of TNT. And the plan was that they would explode the whale out to sea. But
you sure that wasn't Newfoundland?
No, it was in the States. Anyways, so you recognize the cars as from the 70s. Anyways, so the thing blows up, and there's like all these whale particle, meat particles flying everywhere. And one chunk of whale was like 1,000 pounds, and it crushed this old Cutlass Sierra thing. And it just, like the roof caved in. It just destroyed this car. And everybody's like, oh, that wasn't the plan.
You know, they were all in the bar.
People were running for cover. There was guts and meat and gore. And it's like, oh, this.
Oh, the humanity. They were in a bar.
It was like, they didn't kill the whale. It died on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, everybody's like, I know how to get rid of this.
That's what I'm saying. Hey, Bill, you still work at the mine? They got some explosives up there. Go get them. Meet us at the whale. I got a plan.
Well, it was Department of Transport. It was the guys that were like blasting rock to make highways.
That was Bill.
But yeah, like so there was a news crew there that caught the whole thing for the evening news. And you can see the cameraman, you can see he kind of ducked for cover. The camera tilted and zigzagged sideways. And then they circled this car that was crushed. There was this giant chunk of whale flesh on the car, and it was just caved in. It was one of those big boats of a 1970s car. It was like, oh no.
There was a kaboom. There was an earth-shattering kaboom.
It's like, whoa.
Wow, eh?
Yeah. So
the whale has now been evenly distributed throughout the community.
Yes. And there's like families lining the beach watching to see the explosion, and everybody's like, these giant chunks of meat flying through the air. Look out, nobody got hurt, but still a couple cars got injured. It's like,
psychiatrist made a field day 20 years after with all the trauma victims. I was a kid and my parents took me down.
We went to see a whale explode.
It sounded better on paper.
So afterwards, I'm sure there was all kinds of new rules for the highways department. You'll no longer volunteer dynamite to remove whales from beaches.
So how do you say we get rid of it this time? Okay, get some helicopters.
What's neat now sometimes, though, is they'll bury them and they'll mark the location of a whale and they'll come back like 10 years later and pull the bones. Like there's the whale that is in the, you know, the museum that...
ROM?
The ROM.
Royal
so
Ontario
the
museum.
Big, I think it's a blue whale. So yep. I believe that one was one that had been buried and then the bones were recovered like a decade later and they went to the ROM and stuff like that. So there's cleaner ways to do it apparently than explosives.
I am fully 100% behind explodiating. Blow them up real good.
I'm sure lots of people are disgusted by our conversation, but the whale was already dead.
They didn't kill
the whale. They were just trying to dispose of it.
In a reckless manner.
Very reckless. How do you explain that to your insurance company?
Right?
Oh, how did you wreck your car?
If my car gets hit by an animal, so am I covered? Yes. What animal hit it?
A whale. I want to see that insurance report.
Can I get a manager in here, please?
I need somebody to sign up on this.
That's awesome. on that note.
No.
Anything else to talk about this week?
No.
No, huh? All right.
Oh, my.
Oh, man. Well, if you want to find out more about us, and after that conversation, I don't know if you do, but you can go to paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, families, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.